Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. I'm your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 68, an episode a week before things are hopefully very nice, and that involves a Juventus win over Roma, and that is what we are going to start out talking about today. So, on that note, let me bring in Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Hey, good afternoon. Yeah, let's hope for some happy thoughts today and even more next week.
And we've got Sergio. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here. It's always on this fine Sunday evening of international break football. So, yeah, happy to be here. Happy to do the podcast as always.
Yes, fine Sunday of international football. I'm sure you guys are all pumped up for the Nations League wrapping up and all that good stuff, as Chuck Snodson said, because it's an audio medium. So
always.
So we will begin with the Juventus-Roma matchup, and obviously Juventus went into the international break in relatively good shape. Who knows how good of a shape as they're coming out of it, knowing that, Adrian Rabiot currently has coronavirus. Paulo Dybala may or may not be available. Alvaro Morata probably won't be available. Probably some other players will be coming back with some kind of injury after international duty. So, you know, good times, because international breaks mean fun. So, Chucks, I will throw it to you first. Obviously, Roma are different under Mourinho. Obviously, Juventus are still very much in the sculpting phase under Allegri 2.0. Where do you stand on Juventus-Roma, knowing all of these factors going into it?
Yeah, pretty optimistic, actually. Cautiously optimistic, but, you know, pretty optimistic. Of course, we've recovered our form pretty well since, a pretty catastrophic start to the season. So that's good. But, of course, Roma are in really, really good form, unexpectedly. I've never known what to think about Roma. I always think, okay, maybe this year's the year that they kind of, you know, Roma and Lazio are always the two teams that I'm like, okay, I never really give them any credit, but is this maybe the year that they'll, like, you know, convince me or something? And then they sort of do in the beginning, and then they, yeah, usually tail off towards the end of the season. But yeah, I mean, they're in great form, obviously with Tammy Abraham and Lorenzo Pellegrini. He's been doing really, really well. Mourinho, like, singled him out for, like, just really high praise for him, which hard to make a grumpy man like him happy. So that's very impressive.
I think, and it's my version of the Tim Vickery reference, but James Horncastle is continuously banging the Pellegrini drum. Unfortunately, not the Juventus Pellegrini, but the Roma Pellegrini, as saying that he's been easily one of the best players in Serie A this season. So that just shows you how good of a season he's had so far.
Yeah, yeah. And indeed, he doesn't quite get as much praise. Definitely not international praise. I mean, people in general, I hear very little discussion about him in international press. But yeah, I mean, he's, you know, clearly just an excellent player. And like I said, getting someone like Mourinho to be happy is quite a feat in itself. So yeah, well done. And he did also play for, or has been playing a little more for Italy as well, for the Italian national team. He got, just looking at the scores here, he did play 70 minutes against Belgium today in their Italy's 2-1 victory. So yeah, I mean, Roma are in good shape now, definitely big momentum behind them, but at the same time, we've got some pretty good momentum behind us as well with that Chelsea win. Obviously, that was just, you know, hugely lifted spirits of the team and showed us that, you know, we are absolutely capable of just, you know, being the Juve of old Juve, not the Juve of the last 2 years or so. But yeah, we're very much capable of doing that, so that's good. Of course, the only point of kind of concern I have is, well, actually 2 points of concern. First of all, it's just the international break in general. There's always a bit of a, you know, holding your collective breath after the international break to see what the state of fitness is for everyone coming back. Thankfully, the Italy game was actually in Turin, so that was nice. So I mean, you know, players like Chiesa, Bonucci, Chiellini and stuff, they at least just stayed comfortably at home, basically.
Or they have a short trip to J Medical.
Oh yeah, well yeah, yeah, true. True. That's you know, they can step into their jeeps, I suppose, and cruise on down there. So that said, you know, you have the South American players, of course, like Cuadrado, and I suppose Alexandro was called up as well, but actually Colombia, Brazil is today, so there you go. And as far as I know, those are indeed still being played in South America, despite the whole slightly comical confusion that time between Brazil and Argentina. I suppose everybody's straightened stuff out there at Conmebol, so I hope we won't hear that Sandro or Cuadrado are stuck in, I don't know, whatever airport, wherever. But yeah, no, that's the only kind of concern I have there. So yeah, number one thing. And then number two, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little more, is Adrien Rabiot being out due to COVID. So that's, it's actually quite a significant blow because Rabiot had been playing pretty well. And also just that tactical setup where he was playing on the left. So on a lopsided 4-4-2. So I wonder, you know, is Allegri going to play if he wants to maintain that shape, the only person I can think of playing there is McKennie to maintain that kind of awkward, 4-4-2, 4-3-3 sort of, or you just go straight 4-4-2 with Kulusevski there. So that's the only kind of concern I have because, I mean, we built the momentum on that shape and on that formation. So what happens now? Do we change it or do we kind of try and keep it the same? So those are only two points of concern I have. But yeah, for the rest, cautiously optimistic. So let's see.
Cautious being the key word, I think, for you.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. it's every time there's an international break, all I hope for is no serious injuries. As long as there's no serious injuries, I'm fine with an international break. Obviously, I think there has been none. Obviously, Adrien Rabiot with the COVID update, I would say he got COVID, so he's not going to be there, which he hasn't really been the player that you'd point out as the biggest standout by any means. But I do think he plays a very important role. And as Chucks was saying, that formation that Allegri has been playing the last few games that has yielded the best results for the team. So I do think that even if he's not the most important, he hasn't been the most important player for Juve lately, I do think he has a very key role in the field right now, in the lineup that right now, that I'm not really sure that, McKennie could fill in. I think he's going to have to fill in, but I'm not really sure they're going to be able to kind of, just easily replace him, which we might, we're going to, really, that's the biggest concern for me, whether or not Allegri kind of sticks to this formation and tries to fit in another guy there, or he just completely retools again with the players available to him. So that's going to be really interesting to see against Roma. And Roma for, I don't think Jose Mourinho has the same appeal as he did a few years ago. I no longer think he's quote unquote the special one, but say what you will about the guy. The first year he's at a new club, that always tends to be a good year. He's not, his tactics as a football coach, I don't think have ever been the problem. It's more his personality. It's more the way he manages the clubs that kind of have been his downfall, especially in later years. So right now, I think he has Roma playing pretty well, competing for Europe. They've been showing some really, really good performances. Like you mentioned, Pellegrini has been playing really well for them. Tammy Abraham, which was kind of their top signing in the summer, has been, adapting fairly well to Roma. He's very well liked by their fans, and he's just playing really good football too. So it's going to be an interesting matchup. It's going to be really fun to go against Jose Mourinho, which is, he's a heel. He knows he's a heel, and it's fun. You got to give him props for that. Last time he played Juve was when he was coaching Manchester United, if I remember correctly. And they beat Juve at home, and he was taunting the fans and everything. He's a fun personality, and it's always fun to go against teams like Mourinho. So it's definitely going to be an exciting return to form in Serie A. And let's hope that Juve can, keep the form they've been showing the last couple of games, and despite the international break, they can keep building on that.
I actually remember that game, the United Juve game, because the infamous Cristiano Ronaldo was still at the team then. I remember he scored that really, really good volley that, I think it was Bonucci had crossed it and kind of looped over his head, and then he just took it first time on the volley. And I remember we dominated that game, but then lost was through an own goal, and I think a Juan Mata goal or something. I still even know I remember all this.
Like a free kick or something like that.
Yeah. And I do indeed remember Mourinho, you know. I mean, you had a field day with that one. So
you're gonna do this to me first thing in the morning, Chucks. Bring up these memories.
I mean, you know, sweet dreams are made of these, as a great song once went. But, you know, but yeah, no, I that was quite the day. I mean, yeah, it's interesting with Mourinho as a coach. I mean, I think there has been kind of a consensus in the, I don't know, world of football or football journalism that Mourinho's, I guess, tactics or Mourinho as a coach has kind of become outdated, like his just this general style of management and just, you know, not even his tactics, but even just his. Yeah, his way of managing players of just kind of, you know, his leadership style, how he motivates players and how he kind of says, like, I mean, he will just kind of take the mickey out of them in public, you know, and kind of say, you know, not very nice things about them, or just a very confrontational style of management and you know, the whole, yeah, just kind of, yeah, confrontational way of, like, you know, do it or else, or like, you know, don't you have like commitment to the team, instead of like kind of a negative reinforcement versus positive reinforcement, I guess, to use psychological terms. And yeah, I don't know, I from reading kind of just journalists around Europe, people seem to have kind of thought like, okay, you know, is that really still how we should, like, how players are managed, versus like, you know, coaches like Pep, who kind of, you know, put their arms around the player and say like, hey man, okay, you're not doing well, but, you know, here's like positive reinforcement, you know, like if you do this, you can improve in this way. So yeah, I mean, Mourinho had kind of fallen off the radar. And like you said, Sergio, like that first season with like Spurs, for instance, as well, you know, doing well in the beginning and then kind of drop off later. So maybe this is that honeymoon phase again. Who knows? Who knows? You never know, Mourinho.
Or maybe like Max Allegri has been doing the last couple of games against Chelsea and then Torino, literally kicking the two fetties in the app.
Quite literally
kicking them in the ass.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let the record show I don't condone such a behavior. Like I said, I stand for positive reinforcement, not negative one. But yeah, I mean, Mourinho's again made a bit of a comeback at Roma, and yeah, I mean, let's see how long it lasts. I also think it's like with Mourinho, it's funny how his tone has changed. Of like, obviously, he's a very, very winning oriented coach, like just victory above all else. I don't care how we play, you know, victory, victory, victory. But I remember some coaches or a journalist were talking to him about just kind of like his time at Spurs and just reflecting on that. And they, you know, they kind of criticized him a little and said, you know, things weren't so great at Spurs. And like, you know, they seemed to kind of regress at the end. And then, you know, for a coach like Mourinho, he was like, well, you know, I got them into a final and, you know, other coaches didn't get them into it. And I remember reading like, really, Mourinho, you've gone from like celebrating like Champions League victories to now celebrating a League Cup final with Spurs. I thought like, oh man, that's, yeah, it's a bit of a change of tone there. But, you know, let's see how he's changed.
Yeah, he's an abrasive dude. He's an abrasive personality. I remember watching a documentary about him on Netflix. Well, like a mini documentary. I'm pretty sure it was on Netflix. I think it's about like, it's a show where they interview a bunch of coaches and they give out like their life lessons and whatnot. It was actually pretty interesting, but he's always been kind of like this abrasive personality and kind of like a, you know, just a character. Really, my main takeaway from that one was if you're winning, you can definitely pull that off. Like if you're out there winning trebles and doing all this type of stuff, hey, you know, talk whatever you want, right? Like, I mean, you've earned it. But, you know, when the results are not there, then that whole special one, abrasive type of thing, you know, really tends to go badly and tends to go bad quick. So right now, I think for Roma, I think they're playing well. I think they made a good bet, I would say, with a kind of like a high-risk, high-reward coach with Mourinho. I really do think that it was an exciting signing for the league. And, you know, as far as I know, so far there haven't really been any disenchantments with him from the Roma fan base. Like I said, the team's playing well. It's going to be an interesting matchup, a fun game, a really cool way to kind of like go back to Serie A play, kind of like get you hyped up. It's not a matchup against, you know, like Bologna or something. It's going to be a good game to kind of like the blood up again after the international break, and a good measuring stick for Juve too.
Yeah, and then just the last note on Mourinho from me, you know, it's like, I mean, I still think he is a great coach, but I think of like him versus, or kind of compared to someone like Sir Alex Ferguson. And, you know, Sir Alex was like, yeah, I mean, he was obviously very well liked and very well respected, but, you know, Ferguson was like, he was a pretty no-nonsense guy. Like, he, you know, if people crossed the line, like, he would, I mean, they would be out, you know, people would be out. So in that sense, he was like, I think it's just, you can show that as a coach, you can still very much have boundaries and very much have like, you know, okay, you don't, if you don't do it, or like, if you cross this line, then you're just out. But you can also be kind of like a nurturing personality, like Sir Alex Ferguson. I mean, I constantly hear former players talk about him as if he was a father to them, you know, like he was really just, yeah, like nurturing, that's kind of the word I think of. So, I don't know. I think Mourinho is just such an interesting human being. So, there are some times where I'm like very sympathetic to him, and then there are other times I'm like, man, come on, you know, like you're not like, you can't do that anymore. But yeah, let's see.
Well, you guys mentioned the fact that this is a interesting way to come out of the international break, and I was just looking up Juventus's schedule as we were talking here, and I mean, it's three big fixtures in a row where Juventus Roma and then Juventus Zenit in Russia. And obviously we've talked previously about how Max Allegri has approached the next two Champions League fixtures, knowing that that's kind of the two games that Juventus's advancement kind of hinges on. And then it's Inter Milan next weekend. So Sergio said this was an interesting way to come out of the international break. And I think those three fixtures are definitely true to that, aren't they, Chucks?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even those three fixtures. Like, I mean, I was looking at, yeah, the entire kind of list up till really the end of the year. And I mean, there's not a single small game from now until the end of November, I should say, not end of the year. From now until the end of November, there's not a single small game on the fixture list. Of course, we have Roma and then, you know, Zenit twice in, once in October, then once in November. Inter, Sassuolo is always, you know, it's always been a difficult game. Verona is probably the smallest game, although even then they, you know, they tend to be very, very difficult to score against. Zenit again, Fiorentina, who have been really, really excellent this season. Lazio, who are, you know, still pretty strong.
Sorry.
He'll be out. Yeah, he'll be out for a little bit of poetic justice against us too.
You think?
I mean, that said, we paid his paycheck until like what, a few months ago. I don't know how much I agree he should be, but anyway. And as a former banker, I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Oh, come on, he's an old Italian man. You know he holds grudges.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they're not financial anyway. That's all right. Because he has no justification to do that. Lazio then, and Chelsea again. Atalanta, of course, always tough. And and then Atalanta will be the last game of November. So, I mean, those are all huge games from now for, you know, for, what is it, 2 months, basically, month of October, November. So that's, that's really, really, there's just no moment of rest, really no moment to like say, okay, we got a game against, I don't know, Genoa to kind of, you know, chill out and go for it. But to look on the bright side, as we've seen really in the last few weeks and really just the last season or so, Juve seems to only turn up for big games and, you know, not really care very much for the small games. So maybe this is good. Maybe this is good to have like just a relentless series of big games one after the other, and within like, and also, you know, 3-4 days separated. I mean, I'm looking at everything now. Yeah, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. I mean, you know, like all in quick succession. Maybe this is good for us to really keep that mentality up and just keep that mental sharpness up of like, you know, okay, we're playing as Chelsea, now we're playing as Lazio, now we're playing as Fiorentina, and not like, okay, we're playing as Lazio, Chelsea, and now we're playing as Salernitana, Genoa, you know. So, yeah, I think it's a blessing in disguise. And, I think really, it's in some strange way, it's probably the best thing for us to have this run of games, especially also after the Chelsea victory. Obviously, let's hope for no more injuries, because that would be very, very problematic.
This stretch of games is going to be really important, exactly because of who we're playing. It's a lot of games against good competition. And most, you know, importantly, good competition that is currently above Juventus in the table. Those are, you know, matches that you have to have just because of, you know, what we talked about a couple of pods ago, right? Like, just because of the bad start they have, you know, it's obviously way too early. It's only been 7 match days, but you're already looking at a, you know, 10-point hole against the leaders in Napoli right now. So every game you win, it's also a game that your direct rivals for the title are just, you know, are giving points up. So those games are huge. I think they're going to be really big for just a number situation, a purely mathematic situation that they need to make ground to those teams. And also just to really see, you know, how real this team is in terms of if they can keep the form that they're showing lately against really good teams in the league. Obviously, you know, good results against, you know, Torino, good results against Sampdoria, the big, huge result, which was against Chelsea, which is obviously a really good team, but they need to show that against the really good teams in Serie A. And so far, you know, just because they haven't been scheduled since they kind of went into a streak, we don't know if they can sustain that against the really, really good teams and get up for those games and actually start, you know, making significant ground in the Serie A table. So I think that's going to be very interesting. And because, you know, talking about the Champions League and the games that we have left, it's against Zenit. A win against Zenit, you know, you don't want to, you know, start, you know, getting ahead of yourself, but, you know, 9 points, that puts you in a very comfortable, very manageable situation moving forward for the knockout rounds, right? Like, if you get 9 full points, you beat Malmo home, you're almost already there without, you know, without having to worry too much about the second leg against Chelsea and the second leg against Zenit, right? So I think that's really important. And because of the crunch of games, it as soon as you can get the Champions League qualification, you know, done, the better. So I think if they can capitalize with a win against Zenit, I think that just makes, you know, the rest of the group stage much more manageable.
And also just a note about the group stage. I think we've noticed this since they've made that change in the way the pot one and pot two are structured in Champions League, where I've noticed anyway, I mean, it might be just a hunch, but I've noticed that really the marginal like benefit of ending first versus second actually isn't really that much different. I've noticed from like out of the group stage, you know, like coming first or second, qualifying first or second out of the group stage for the round of 16. I've noticed, yeah, the marginal benefit really isn't that much. Like in terms of the difficulty of your opposition, I mean, think about it, you know, we ended first last year. Anyway, my memory fails me here, but I just do remember that, like, you know, you have a lot of groups, for instance, with like the group of PSG and City. Like, I mean, okay, you can end first or second, but you'll likely have to face basically PSG or City. So that's a group like that. So, you know, I'm not too torn on ending first or second out of the Champions League. I mean, I guess I marginally prefer coming first, but I mean, if we do end up coming second, because I don't know, let's say we lose against Chelsea in the second leg, or just screwed up in some way, then I mean, I don't know. I'll be all right with it. But again, you know, you look at groups like Group B, you have Liverpool and Atleti will probably qualify out of that group. I consider them equally difficult opposition. So we'll see. And I don't know. Let's just qualify out of it and let's see.
Well, obviously, as I mentioned before, we got going here. There's a lot of personnel components going into it. You've got, you know, the Rabiot stuff. You've got Dybala potentially coming back. And before we transition into the Twitter questions we have for today, I mean, you know, if Max Allegri decides to stick with this 4-4-2 that he's been using, and obviously a lot depends on just how many strikers he actually has available, since the two Fettis have been playing more striker than they have winger lately, is there a direction you think Max Allegri should go, knowing that Rabiot will be out at least you know, the first couple games of this post-international break stretch of fixtures?
I mean, McKennie has been kind of, like I said, it's either McKennie or Kulusevski, honestly. Although, actually, before I answer that, I will say, please, 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 let's not play Dybala yet. Like, let's not rush Dybala back. Because it's like...
And I might add, too, that some of the starting lineup things might be answered by when the South Americans come back. Because I believe they've got, a lot like the September international break, the South American countries, they play, I believe it's Thursday. I know Cuadrado plays Thursday, and I believe Bentancur with Uruguay also plays Thursday. So we might be in, obviously not to the same extent as when Juventus played Napoli very shorthanded, but yeah, it might be a case of Johnny Square and a few others only being on the bench rather than in the starting lineup.
Which means, and yeah, you are correct. They do play on Thursday again.
Fun.
14th, yeah. Yeah, in which case, you know, if we have the same situation as last time where, you know, indeed they come back on like, what, Saturday morning or some craziness like that, then that would mean we're short a bunch of wingers. And that's kind of problematic because we're playing in formation with two wingers in center forward. So then, I mean, we're just completely short of like personnel then. Which means, yeah, I mean, you probably have to play Moise Kean then. Yeah, you probably have to play him.
And that's what we thought against Chelsea, Chucks.
Yeah, yeah, true, true, true. I did indeed. But I was wrong.
I did too, and I wrote 400 words about it and then looked like an idiot 24 hours later.
Yeah, 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 true. But yeah, no, I think in this case, because yeah, you would be short Cuadrado, Sandro, no, Bentancur as well, probably Dybala, like I said, most likely Morata as well. Yeah, I mean, you'd have like, yeah, only wingers you have left then are Chiesa, Bernardeschi, Kulusevski. I believe that's it, really. So yeah, then, I mean, if you're going to put two of them in center forward, it means you only have one winger, which you could pull off then. So you could have Chiesa, Bernardeschi center forward and then Kulusevski on the right. And then McKennie on the left. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's some mental gymnastics.
I can see the wheel spinning trying to you trying to figure out who's actually there.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, you're spreading yourself very thin. And I know Allegri is generally risk averse. I don't know. I think Moise Kean would have to play really just to just, you know, spread the load like, yeah, across the team. But which again shows us like Rabiot being out with COVID. I mean, it's a significant hit, you know. Give him a lot of stick, but I think he's become a very important tactical part of the team. And the more and more I think about it, the more I just see parallels between him and Matuidi in the same way, like people kind of seeing like, oh, Matuidi, you know, oh God, he's, you know, kind of a pain, but his tactical importance to the team is just still very important. For Rabiot, it's only been recently. I mean, he's so up and down in terms of form, but still, I think, you know, he's very important to the team.
He's far from a perfect player, and people give him a lot of stick because he, you know, the potential is there. It just seems so tantalizing. It seems like he has everything to really turn into this top-tier midfielder. And, you know, sometimes he's kind of like very, you know, lackadaisical on the field. He sometimes pouts and it doesn't seem like he tries super hard. And that kind of like plays a role in it. But he is a very important part of the team. I don't think that if you take him out and you just put in McKennie there, I don't think this team is as good. I don't think that works really. Mostly just because McKennie has been really, well, really bad this year. Like he just hasn't really found his form that he was showing last year. So I think that they will definitely feel the blow. But, you know, this is also a chance for a guy like McKennie, for example, a guy that has shown at times that he can be a really good player. You know, to kind of like get that mojo back and see what he can do. So, you know, in a way, this type of games really show, you know, a shorthanded Juve. It's also always a chance for someone else to step up, for someone else to kind of like get the minutes that they wouldn't get. For me, those guys are going to be, for example, Luca Pellegrini, our Pellegrini. Like the guy has played for one game in his Juve career, and he looked pretty good. I wasn't blown away, but he was pretty good. I just don't see why he hasn't seen more of the field, especially at a position that's kind of thin overall. It's baffling to me that he's not playing more, because I think he's looked okay. A guy like Caio Jorge, for example, that debuted before the international break, you know, striker, he's going to get a chance to get a few more minutes. He's going to get a chance to get playing time. And Moise Kean is also going to really step up and take a bigger workload, especially with Morata out. I think that just because of the way the team is structured, I think they try to shoehorn McKinney in Rabiot's spot, kind of roll it back the way they've been playing lately. That would be my bet, especially because right now you are also without Dybala and Morata. But as a whole, what I'm looking forward of this, you know, tricky situation that Juve is going to find themselves in is just giving other guys a chance to see if they can develop, to see if they can put productive minutes. Because if you suddenly have a Caio Jorge, for example, if he's suddenly like a player that can fill in minutes, if he's more than just a prospect, if he can actually play good, productive minutes, it really solves a lot of other things for your team in sense of depth, in sense of rotations. Like, it's really just another piece to play with. And I think that'd be huge for Juve if that's the case. But we're just not going to see it until the guy actually plays. And this is a good opportunity for him to do so.
Now, I've seen in our comments section, some people have been saying, okay, well, Rabiot's out. Well, Artur's back. But the thing that kind of catches me off guard a little bit with that is I can't really see Artur doing the same kind of stuff that Rabiot's been doing. I mean, it's a lot of, it might not be, say, and this is going back a ways, but like when Marquisio was kind of a winger, but not really a winger, kind of that Metsala role that he played where, you know, he was technically the left winger, but a lot like Rabiot, he did a lot of stuff where he drifted inside as well. And I don't know. I just see Artur playing more of a role, almost like Bentancur, maybe not the same defensive possibilities, but where he's essentially playing off of Locatelli rather than being that out wide.
Yeah, I mean, Artur and Rabiot are very, very different players indeed. You know, you can shove Artur on the left wing. Yeah, you can do that very easily. And I think also the point of, you know, okay, Rabiot is injured, but then Artur is fit. You know, okay, doesn't that solve the problem? Well, it also just changes the tactical setup of the team very much. Like I said, we have this weird lopsided 4-4-2. Yeah, but Artur, he's more of a creative, well, supposed to be anyway, more of a creative, like, passing type of player. Like, ideally, he's kind of a regista, I think, ideally. But, I mean, that hasn't come off quite yet. But, you know, hopefully sometime. And, yeah, Rabiot's not a creative player. He's not, like that technical passer. He's, he's more of a runner and just more of a kind of a glue to hold the team, or hopefully to hold part of the midfield together. And, you know, has those late runs into the box as well from deep. So, I think, again, it's just a whole question of, like, does Allegri want to stick as much as possible to that tactical setup that has, you know, got us a few wins on consecutively? Or does he just say, okay, let's just change it and then, say, go to a 4-3-3, where Artur could indeed play pretty reasonably well? So I don't know. Let's see.
I do think that just having that option, Locatelli has been so far and away the best midfielder this team has. Arguably the best player on the team, just because he's played really well and very consistently, and just he has a lot of minutes already. He's been everything that we bargained for, and I would say even a little bit more. But one of his, you know, biggest traits is that he's been playing really well in front of the defense, which was something that we were clamoring for, and he's been really good at it and really adept at it. But he's also perfectly capable of playing that, like Danny was saying, that sort of Marquisio-esque role as a, you know, kind of like sort of a box-to-box midfielder. To me, he's perfectly capable of playing that. And that's just another component of what he brings to the table, because, like we've said a bunch of times in this podcast, Arthur has some skills. He has skills, a skill which is holding the ball, and that's about it. And that's a useful player. That's a useful player if he is surrounded by the right players, by the right components. I'm actually kind of curious to see how he looks this year. He's had very, very limited chances to show whether he's much more than just kind of like a money laundering scheme from between Barcelona and Juventus. Really, he hasn't really shown us anything so far. Between injuries, between, you know, whatever, he's just really not shown anything. So I'm really excited to see him, and especially, you know, with Rodrigo Bentancur, that's playing a lot better than he was last year, with Locatelli, who is just at another level. I think both of those guys with Arthur, you know, I think that's an interesting combination. Will that work? Who knows? But I think that's just an interesting combination to have and to experiment with, and I'm looking forward to it. I think that's Arthur for me is kind of like an X factor. Like, if he can give you anything that's just a good production level, I think that changes the outlook for this Juve team, for this Juve midfield unit quite a lot.
Yeah, as long as the Arthur deal doesn't cause Juventus to show up in the Pandora papers, then I'm all good.
I'm pretty sure it's there.
God forbid. God forbid.
That was
Shakira's in it, so hey, I mean, no stone left unturned.
That deal was one of those deals that just like no one won. Like, just like everyone's a loser in that deal. Like, Miralem Pjanic, terrible at Barcelona. He's playing in Turkey now. Like, Arthur has shown nothing at Juve. Like, just no one won. The bookkeepers, I guess, won. But outside of that, just pretty terrible deal all around.
The capital gains gods won, didn't they, Chucks?
Yeah, and potentially the tax doctors, potentially. Potentially. I don't know. I won't say anything. I don't want to get sued. So yeah. I didn't say anything.
We'll edit all that out. All right, let's jump into some Twitter questions here. We got a couple of them from you guys today. First one from David Desberg at the True RAC. How many of our garbage players do you think we can push onto Newcastle? And it's funny because right after he sent that in, there's a report from, I believe, the English press saying, hey, maybe Aaron Ramsey would be interested in going to Newcastle.
Of course he is. Of course he is. You know, I think Newcastle is now aiming higher than our quote unquote garbage players. I think they're playing with some big boy bucks now. So I don't know how, you know, interested they'd be on a dude like Ramsey, but you know, this whole narrative of, and shout out David, who's always, you know, who's a listener, who's always sending us questions. I just, you know, I've been going back to this, I think, since like for a year now, when everyone's like, well, let's just sell all of our like deadwood and all the garbage players. I'm like, dude, I'd love to. Like, I think no one wants Aaron Ramsey in a Juve shirt. Like, no one except Aaron Ramsey, probably. And given his comments, maybe not even him. Like, no one's happy here, but no one, like, also no one wants to buy him. Like, we're stuck with him, we're stuck with a bunch of guys. It's not that they don't want to sell him, or like Juve inherently still believes in them as good players. That there's no buyers there, and for one reason or another, they just can't unload them. It's like, you know, I can't tell you how many times I saw comments on the blog that was like, we should sell Rodrigo Bentancur. It's like, no one's gonna buy Rodrigo Bentancur at this point in his career. And also, we owe like half of whatever we get to Boca Juniors. So it's just, they're not even pursuing that deal. It makes no sense. So that was the thing that we kept coming back and back, like last year. It's like, they just have no real assets. They just really don't have a bunch of really particularly valuable players to even sell, to even unload. So I think that's still the same. Like, I've already made peace with Aaron Ramsey running out his contract at Juventus. That's what's probably going to happen, or they're going to find out a sort of buyout thing similar to the one they did with Khedira, or the one that they did with Higuain, something like that, because he's just not a very valuable asset. No one's going to take him at the wages he's on, and that's just what he is. And unfortunately for Juve, there's a number of players in similar positions. So, you know, to directly answer the question, I don't think any of them. I think we're stuck with them for better or worse.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, the only thing I'll add is that indeed Aaron Ramsey, I think he had an interview with someone somehow, and he talked about like how he could be fit if a club takes good care of him or something, or like, you know, he could stay fit if like a medical team takes good care of him. I'm kind of scrolling through here to see if I can quickly find it, but Which basically was a little swipe at Juve, frankly. We're saying like, hey, you know, people aren't taking good care of me, so that's why I'm injured.
Yeah, no, like I said, no one's happy in this marriage. No one's happy.
He's acting like he was never injured at Arsenal either. Like yeah, that was a rap on him coming in, is that he's talented, but yes, he's always injured.
Oh yeah, found it. He insisted his fitness is not a problem when he is managed correctly. So make of that what you will.
Now yeah. I'm shaking my head on an audio medium.
I know what I can do, and with the right management, I can stay fit for a long period of time and play a lot of games.
So, I guess he's just hasn't ever had proper management in his career then.
Yeah, he says only with Wills, basically. He does.
That's the thing.
Apparently he played well in their game. Their 2-2, or was it 2? I forget what.
Well, you know what? I take that back. Like, you know, maybe his management is exactly just playing with Wales. Just play a couple times every 3 months. And that's maybe the correct management for him.
Yeah, he was apparently very good against the Czech Republic. 2-2 against Czech Republic. And scored the 1-0. And had a yellow card in the first minute. So there you go.
Well, Sergio, isn't he on that same kind of plan with Juventus too? Play a couple times every 3 months?
Yeah, pretty much. I'd be curious. I'm not going to do the research right now, but I'd be curious to know just how many games he's played like exactly for Juve, because I cannot imagine it's been over like 30 plus. Like, I cannot imagine it's been more than that. Like, maybe counting all appearances when he gets subbed in like for 5 minutes in the end, but like, I cannot imagine that he's played like a full season's worth of games. Like, it's just been... I caught Andrea Agnelli and the previous kind of like board a lot of slack, more than most, but that deal was just, you know, super questionable from the moment it was made, and it just looked worse and worse and as it goes on. But for my money, the worst deal that they've made in their whole stint.
Thank you to Live Score in that article that I referenced. Ramsey has only started 25 matches in Serie A, playing 2,238 minutes in total, apparently during his entire time, which I think this is just the league. So, yes, but that alludes to it a little.
Yeah, 25 starts in, what, a little over 2 years? That's not exactly great stuff.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Well, speaking of health matters, from Vincent Ferrara at Juventino_BNA, what's the deal with Jay Medical? We have multiple players that weren't considered injury prone before they came to the team. Over the last few years, it seems we've had players that can't keep themselves healthy. How much of it is the players versus the medical care?
I don't think Juve gets, you know, again, I don't know the numbers. You did have to look the data up and everything. I just don't think they are particularly more injury prone than any other team. Personally, I think everyone's been dealing with injuries. Every club has been dealing with injuries. Like, you know, just off the top of my mind, like Eden Hazard in Real Madrid wasn't really an injury prone guy, became a super injury prone guy at Real Madrid. Like, is that because their, you know, medical staff is bad or anything? I don't know. Sometimes, you know, you just get unlucky. Especially, I think, you know, Chucks has been kind of like banging the drum for this a few times. Especially, I just don't think that the compressed schedules, bunch of, you know, international breaks, bunch of summer competitions, these guys are not getting any sort of rest, and that's just inevitably going to lead to more wear and tear and more injuries. And that's definitely something that they're gonna have to look at, not only Juventus, but just, you know, FIFA as a whole, just football as a whole. They're gonna have to look at, because this is unsustainable. And they have their proposal for the World Cup every 2 years, and they still want to keep the Euros, and they still want to keep Copa America, and they still want to keep all of these things while adding games. It's going to be unsustainable. These guys can't go like a full year without getting hurt. So I think it has a lot to do more with that than anything else, in my opinion.
Yeah, you look at the Italy guys, and they've basically had, what, like a month off in 2021, if that. Chiesa, Chiellini, Bonucci, and throw Bernardeschi in there as well, even though he hasn't played as much as those other guys. But they obviously played the entire second half of this last season's schedule, went right into the Euros, went the entire distance of the Euros, and then had a couple weeks off before coming back to Juventus preseason training, and then going right into the right into the season. So, and then you think about what the schedule was like last season, where they basically had a very short preseason. What it was like, what, 3-4 weeks that Pirlo had. A lot has happened between now and then, and it was only 13 months ago. So, excuse me, but yeah, the schedule has been so absolutely crazy since the restart after lockdown that these guys' bodies can only take so much, no matter how good a shape they're in.
I agree. Like you said, Sergio, I've been beating this drum for a long time. So, yeah, I agree. Yeah, and you know, if you want to talk about injury crises, one of my best friends, he's a Milan fan, and he tells me basically for the last year and a half they've had an average of like 6-7 injuries, which, you know, like per week. And I mean, you know, you want to talk about like, yeah, bad medical team, I mean, go to Milan, you know, and yeah, check that out. He always tells me like, oh man, if we had a full team. I'm like, at this point your basis level is just having 5-6 players out with injuries, so you know, that's a pipe dream there.
All right, last question here from @FGungor1, should Serie A as a whole be worried about MBS's group also potentially buying Inter after getting Newcastle?
I don't know if concerned is the right word. Obviously, Serie A already, you know, has a history of dealing with like sketchy, you know, ownership. Like, you know, let's not forget the whole AC Milan saga just like a few years ago when they were like brandishing scarves that were like, we're so rich, and, you know, they were not. Even the intern ownership, like the current intern ownership, like they were a Chinese group that also, like, maybe their money wasn't in the up and up. And, you know, Serie A really doesn't have as big of a concern about letting, you know, foreign investment groups in. We know for a fact they don't really have a problem with Saudi Arabia since they're going to play the Supercopa there this year again on December. So, obviously, for Serie A, I think it's going to be super in if they would be interested in acquiring Inter. After that, you get into the whole debate about whether it's morally correct, whether you're a bad person for supporting a league or a club that is owned by maybe not so morally upright people. And that's a whole rigmarole I'm not going to get into. But just as a whole, I think Serie A would be pretty into that idea. Just because, you know, say what you will, they're going to bring a bunch of money. And if you adhere to the whole concept of the Super League and we need more money, if not, we're going to be left behind, then you have to be pretty content with that. More money for Inter, then that means more money for the league, then that means a more competitive league, which in theory should lift all boats. Whether or not that ends up being true, who knows? But yeah, if that went to pass, I guess that's my take on it.
Yeah, I don't have too much to add. I think maybe the word worried is not really, I guess, not the accurate term to use, because worried about their ownership coming to, or like that kind of group coming to Serie A. I mean, you know, if there was the only kind of point of, I guess, agreement that I had with the Super League was that indeed the argument of like financially European football, I guess global football, but European football is, yeah, financially not in a great place. Financial fair play, I think, was a good rule. It just came about like 20, 30 years too late, I think, or even more, really. Like at the moment, it just wasn't a good rule. So, yeah, it would be useful. Like just any kind of new ownership coming into Italy would really just be done as kind of a rescue for any kind of financial, like a financially unstable club. Inter have obviously had the issues with the Suning group. So, yeah, I mean, there's no guarantee that they come in and rescue everything. Even like in the short term, they might, you know, provide an influx. But then in the long term, there's no guarantee that, you know, the gift will keep on giving, I guess. So, yeah, I think the whole worried about like, oh, God, there's going to be another group that's going to come and take over an Italian team. I don't think that's the issue. I think it's just figuring out why clubs would even need that, which is, well, because they're financially unstable. Why are they financially unstable? Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. That's a whole big discussion. So I think the financial instability or financial insolvency, that's the word. Financial insolvency, that's really the big question you have to talk about, rather than like, oh, all these groups from, you know, Saudi Arabia and this and that country coming and, you know, taking over our clubs. I mean, I think it's, yeah. I don't think that's the question really to talk about, but yeah, let's see. I mean, I don't know. I doubt it. I don't know, but yeah, I And also with COVID, you know, like now that crowds are like the stadiums are opening up, revenues should get a little better for clubs. But yeah, and that just kind of as the last point on that, if you really want to talk about like financial stability, you know, it's the whole stadium ownership thing in Italy. That's really the huge issue. Lack of stadium ownership, that means you're losing out on all that revenue. And, you know, that means that you're going to need a sugar daddy to come in and pay your bills. So yeah, tackle that issue first.
I know we've mentioned it before on this podcast, but on Juventus's losses, but Inter just a few short days ago posted 246 million euros worth of losses in the last fiscal year. So not only is the Suning Group taking on a whole lot of loan debt, but they are also, like Juventus, very much feeling the pandemic. And another reason why they were forced to sell a few players over the summer. So the financial outlook for Inter is not looking all that great. And maybe on another podcast episode, we can have our financial expert, Chucks, dive into all the numbers, because he could probably explain it a whole lot better than I can.
Yeah, I've had the time to look at all their papers, man. I mean, those are like encyclopedias worth of papers or financial statements to go through. So yeah, I've only had the time. But yeah, I mean, you also look at, like, for instance, slightly off topic, but the Evergrande group in China. I mean, they're basically a real estate group. And I mean, they own, I think, I'm just looking at it now, Guangzhou Evergrande, and I want to say another football club as well. But anyway, yeah, I mean, they're like financially, well, they've missed a few loan payments and all that. And it's caused a bit of a, you know, financial, nervousness in China and in global markets as well. But yeah, you just see, like, you know, the owners can also have issues, financial issues, and then owners get issues, then yeah, what happens to the club? So we will see.
We will indeed. Well, that wraps things up, say that three times fast, for this week's episode of the Ole Speaks. Thank you all for your Twitter questions. We always appreciate them. You can send them to us at Juventus Nation on the Twitter machine, as well as following us there. You can follow us on Facebook, search Black and White and Red All Over. You can use that same search term, Black and White and Red All Over, for following us on your preferred podcasting platform, be it Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please leave us a nice review and give us a nice rating, because we like nice things. So for Chucks and for Sergio and for the new dad, Sam Lopresti, this is Danny saying, thank you very much for listening, and we will talk to you guys next week.